Hello, and welcome to Dragon's Trove, where all we talk about is Dungeons and Dragons. My name's Tristan, and as always, I'm joined by Troy.
Hello.
And my brother, Jace.
Hi.
In tonight's episode, we're going to be looking at two sides of the same coin, the Warlock and the Paladin. I think it'll probably be a pretty interesting conversation, so stick around and enjoy. And we're here with episode 9, the Warlock versus the Paladin. And I have to say that last week's episode was like super fun to record.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely something.
Yeah, I have not had that much fun recording an episode yet, so I hope this one's even better.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting, I'm sure.
Well, before we get into the meat of the episode, we are going to make our weekly plug for Epic Adventure Candle Company. This is what, week 3 of doing that? I think so.
Yes. Yes. The third week.
Yeah. So anyway, check them out. EpicAdventureCandles.com. Go there, sign up for the newsletter. You get a 10% off coupon as soon as you sign up, and you can use that for any amount of money that you wish to spend. Although I do think that orders of $50 or more actually get free U.S. domestic shipping. So that's pretty cool. Can't go wrong with free shipping.
Yeah, dude. I'll pay extra money on a product to get free shipping.
That's right. And the products are so good that, I mean, it's really not like a hard choice to spend more money on these candles.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because they are like tailored for the gamer. And we coined the phrase last week, delicious for your nose. So, yep.
And
there you go.
And safe for your mouth. We don't recommend that, but.
But you can do it.
Soy.
Yeah. So anyway, Epic Adventure Candles, delicious for your nose. So that should be the slogan.
Epic for your, delicious for your nose.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, let us move into our topic for the evening, Warlocks and Paladins. These are two classes that I think, well, one of them's got a bad rap in my brain. The other one is just, like, considered the class for edgelords. So, anyway, tonight, what we're going to do is Jace is going to talk about the Warlock, and then Troy is going to talk about the Paladin, and then we are going to just kind of talk about the two together and what kind of party dynamics, even how much fun it is to have a Warlock and a Paladin in the same party. So,
definitely. Anyway,
yeah, so whenever one of you guys are ready.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and I'll start us off. So first off, I want to talk about the two differences between the two before I start getting into the Warlock a little bit. So they both get their powers from a different kind of entity, so to speak. It's just that one has an employer and the other has a sugar daddy. I think that's the biggest difference between the two.
That's pretty well put. It's an interesting way to put it, but that's
never
awesome.
Never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
But it does work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's the Warlock in itself is a... They kind of pick a patron to create a pact with, you know, where it's a symbiotic type of relationship, and they're granted extra powers because of that. And a Warlock doesn't necessarily have to be a dark character. They can gain powers from pretty well any sort of a being that's willing to bestow it upon them. Troy, you want to talk about the Paladin real quick before we get in real deep?
Yeah. So the Paladin, like Jace was saying, real similar, and they get their powers from serving a deity or serving an oath with the deity. But that's how they get their powers. Like Jay said, it's their employer, a good way to think about it. So as long as they're serving them and as long as they're keeping them happy, then they're going to continue to have their powers that were granted to them based on the oath that they took. So,
yeah, whereas a warlock can pretty well do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I will also say that that paladins too can serve a cause,
yeah,
not necessarily an entity.
Yeah,
as
true.
Well.
Yeah, as long as you're, I mean, as long as you're sticking with that oath, as long as that oath is toward something, like you said, either a deity or a cause.
Right, and the cause for the paladin most likely being justice,
mm-hmm,
or vengeance, generally speaking. Which, yeah, is kind of cool, because when you think of a paladin, to me, I think of the do-gooder. But if you are a vengeance-bound, whoever you are, you can easily become a paladin. As long as you sell, it's pretty much being a sellout.
Yeah.
That's paladin.
That's a good way to think about it.
Yeah, that is well put. I mean, you could always play the paladin that is driven on his own sense of justice, and you know, he goes out and he slaughters people like crusader style for his cause, you know,
yeah,
and he's just like a chaotic good kind of character, and still be able to maintain his powers by doing that.
Yeah, one of our friends put it like as... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, I didn't have anything else to say.
Okay, good. No, one of our friends put it pretty well as like a religious zealot. So, you know, it doesn't have to be necessarily be religious, like Jace was saying. It could be for a cause, but I mean, you're going to put everything in your mentality. Anything you do is always for the greater good of that cause or that deity, in service of that. So, you know, it's some might say it's crossing the line, but if you can still justify it with that cause or with that deity, then you're good to go, man.
So, Troy, why would you want to play a paladin?
You know, so when we first started, I thought a paladin would be really cool. And then, like, I think Tristan was alluding to it a little bit at the beginning there, with it having, you know, such a bad rap and it being pretty hard to roleplay. But I think 5e's kind of fixed that a little bit, and I'll let Tristan kind of talk on that a little bit more here in a minute. But for me, I think it's a lot more, I don't know, I mean, I still think it's one of those, you know, get up in your face, kind of hit it with my stick kind of character. It can be, but it's also, like, if you're wanting to roleplay a very charismatic leader, a paladin is a great choice. I think if I'm wanting to do like this warrior that's got like, you know, super high charisma and can talk his troop or talk his party into just, you know, diving headfirst into a situation and letting them know that, hey, I got your back in this, I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are certainly people that go for that kind of a playstyle with it. You know, personally, well, I'll bring up the negative stigma that's been about it. Back in 3.5, paladins were all but useless, and so nobody really played them, and they also had to be lawful good, or
mm-hmm,
back in that, it was pretty well called lawful stupid, where you had to do good all the time, and it made them extremely overbearing in a party because of how good they had to be. You know, and I've, personally, for me as fantasy, I just imagine them as beta warriors. You know, you got or beta fighters, rather. You got the fighter that goes in and does damage, and then you got this other guy that's got to do good and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm not having that. I'm not about it.
Well, here is something that I think can be a stigma breaker, is that the paladin, at least in 5th edition, isn't so much just a meat shield. And I think that having more utility accessible is what helps to bring the paladin into the fray more than just, you know, he's going to have a lot of health. He's probably going to be wearing plate. So he's going to have a high AC. He's probably going to have a lot of health. But for me, to play a paladin now, yes, there are other options. But the thing that I like most about it is that this can act as your cleric if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you could take healing spells primarily as your main focus with your paladin and still be comfortable as far as doing battle goes. And so that makes it a paladin more appealing just from my perspective, because that's what I like in a character class, is I like the ability to be able to do multiple things for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And it's, then the role playing aspect is also I guess I'm going to have to say upgrade from me playing 3.5, because there is the sense of a cause that you can be sold out to, whether mm-hmm. you know, that's justice, whether that's vengeance, whether that's liberation of a people. It makes it to be a broader scope, and the way that I think about a paladin in 5e and moving forward is that's your classic knight. That's your chivalrous knight. Like not the cavalier subclass that the fighter gets, even though that is like the knight in shining armor on a horse, but I think the whole ideology behind chivalry is what is embodied in a 5th edition paladin.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go multiple ways with that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, they've definitely expanded quite a bit of options where you could do a lot more with a paladin this time around than you ever could. You know, so it definitely makes it more appealing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons why I've never liked the paladin is because I did feel it was so stifled, and it has opened up a little bit. But when you compare it to a class like the warlock, it is still stifled. I said at the very beginning that the difference between paladins and warlocks is one has an employer and one has a sugar daddy. So the paladin has an employer. It's got to keep its oath. It's got to do stuff. Otherwise, it loses its powers. Whereas a warlock, it finds a patron that just kind of bestows it with powers that will really let him do whatever he wants with that. And warlocks are so cool because they are the spellcasting class that I tell people, hey, if you're just getting into spellcasting, you need to try this class. It is essentially the human fighter of spellcasting, because you're going to spend a lot of your time just casting Eldritch Blast. You get your spell slots back on a short rest. They automatically cast at their highest spell slot that you have. You know, there's not a whole lot of thinking or thought into it. You just do it. But it's such an open canvas. So warlocks get to pick a patron, and they have a couple different ones. You know, you have like the fiends or the old ones and stuff. But you can even do stuff like Xanathar's Guide has you be able to be under a celestial. So you're actually picking up like healing spells and stuff like that. And, you know, there's the Hexblade where you can fight more in combat, and you're more of a spellblade kind of a class. And it's so neat that they've expanded the thought process of a warlock from it's a guy that delves into dark secrets and he's like a necromancer but not, to kind of this is just a guy that is just so thirsty for knowledge and power that he'll do whatever it takes to get it with whoever he has to sign up with.
Yeah, and another good aligned entity that you could, well, not even entity, just patron that you can align yourself with is something in the Archfey realm, where you could easily stumble into a wooded area and come in contact with an Archfey and actually find yourself so intrigued and enthralled by their magical prowess that you've actually entered into a covenant that maybe you weren't even prepared to enter into, but here you are.
Mm-hmm.
And the sugar daddy aspect of just here it is, layer it on me, also coincides with I kind of get the mob boss mentality from a patron, where as soon as that patron is ready to collect on something, I mean, you've got to be there to deliver.
Yeah,
with the warlock, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it is something ominous or evil, but it definitely has a hold on your character's mind, because even though the warlock is thirsty for knowledge, whether he likes it or not, he is going to not be 100% in control of his life.
Yeah, I think that
moving forward,
what you were getting at with the mob boss too, it's a lot like that in the sense that the more you get from your sugar daddy, the deeper you're gonna go. Like you can keep searching out. Like Jay said, you have that thirst for knowledge, so you can keep searching that stuff out. But that's gonna cause you to fall deeper in that covenant with your sugar daddy, and that's like Tristan said, he's gonna come to collect at some point. So what are you willing to give?
Yeah, you have to basically be willing to give up everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's different from a wizard class where you have a thirst for knowledge and you spend all your time studying and everything, but you never really truly let yourself go to somebody being able to take command over your life if they so chose.
Well, yes, you're right. And I think that something that separates the warlock and the paladin is that at some point, generally, as a warlock, if you ever fell out of commitment with your patron, and let's say they didn't come right immediately to kill you, that power is not necessarily stripped from you. And with a paladin, it primarily is stripped from you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to atone as a paladin, and with a warlock, you don't. In fact, a warlock may have a set amount of time that is written into their contract. Mm-hmm. And you can swing that as levels as a DM. If somebody's wanting to multi-class, you can say, okay, well, for X amount of levels, this will be your time restraint that you have on your contract, which I think is really cool. But your paladin breaks his oath, you're then given a choice as a storyteller and as a player. Does your paladin atone and redeem himself, or does he continue down this path because he's already broken an oath? So what's stopping him from completely going 180 on his lifestyle, yeah, on the choices that he makes? And the DM guide has the Oathbreaker variant in it, and most of the time these are going to be your evil characters. I think Oathbreaker paladins would make great antagonists in any sense of any world, wherever you put them, just because it's not restricted to one kind of oath breaking. It's just a mindset, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, there's even like going in that mindset vein, there's even things like, you know, like a paladin will wear a crest of his god or whatever he's doing on his body because he chooses to. You know, like he truly believes in what he's doing, whereas a warlock might not even care for their patron. Like they're just in it for the power and knowledge, and the patron can choose to physically mark the warlock just because. You know, they can change their eyes to be like their eyes or something along those lines. So like they can say, yeah, you're going to get this. So mm-hmm. it's just like a total different shift of the mentality of it, of the, you know, I'm with this person because I like them, as opposed to I'm with this person because of what they do for me.
Yeah.
One's 50 Shades of Grey and one's not.
Holy crap.
Here we go.
But it's true.
It is.
It is true.
Yeah. Yeah, you got a point with that.
Well, I like extreme party dynamics. I like to be in a party with extreme dynamics. And I think that having a paladin and a warlock within the same space can be hilarious.
Yeah. Or it could not be hilarious at all.
Or destructive.
Like, yeah, it could be like, it could be destructive, it could be hilarious, or it could be completely neutral because of just the vast amount of options that 5e gets you.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, like they could never have a disagreement and nothing interesting happened between them just because of how well they're written.
Right. Yeah. It's something that I've always thought would be, as a DM at least, if somebody were to approach me, or two people were to approach me with here's what here's what I want to play a warlock, and here's what I want to play a paladin. As a storyteller, I would definitely work in some options and decisions based on these characters, where it would put the whole party into a moral dilemma.
Like who to side with, almost.
Yeah, and not because I want to split up the party, although that would be a lot of fun, because death happens when you split up the party.
Yeah.
But just because it brings a sense of realism to your game, where here you are with a choice, and it's not always easy to make the right call.
Yeah.
And as a paladin who is always an upholder of good, generally, you know, for the sake of the group, how do you make a call that you know is ultimately the wrong choice, ethically or morally?
Yeah.
Do you do it for the good of the group, or do you fight for your cause to the point where it creates strife?
Yeah, yeah. You could even present your party with such choices as, like, you know, a paladin where, like, are you going to do this act of evil because it is for the greater good? You know, it's like, do the pros outweigh the cons in this? Or on the other side of the warlock, like, do you go against your patron because it's what needs to be done?
Mm-hmm. Right. These are huge, groundbreaking game changers.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to put a conditional on this too. Budding DMs and, you know, people that are just getting into it, maybe talk to your party about it beforehand and warn them that things like this could happen, so you're not just springing on them all of a sudden. Experienced role players and people in D&D probably won't care, but all of a sudden having a paladin being faced with giving up his powers, the same with a warlock, can probably make a person pretty mad in life if you don't approach it correctly.
Yeah. So let me ask you guys this, though. How would you guys play an Oathbreaker? Like, if that situation came up and you had that choice, so obviously you have three choices, really, based on what the DM wants to do. You can atone, like Tristan was saying. You can pick another class, I guess, if that's what the DM wants you to do, or you can become an Oathbreaker. How would you guys play an Oathbreaker?
I guess it depends on the circumstances of why I broke my oath.
Okay.
As to, you know, like, what I would go into. It's really hard to say. You know, you could break your oath and do something completely different. Like, you know, all of a sudden, now you want to be a warlock, or yeah, you want to be a wizard, or you just don't care for this anymore, or maybe you just wanted a normal life, you know, so where you don't have all these extra burdens of being an Oathbreaker.
Yep.
Breaker. What do you think, Tristan?
Well, I'm going to do this for the memes.
Do it.
I'm going to break my oath, but I'm not going to immediately take a mind shift. I'm going to probably slowly develop characteristics that would progress in a natural way, but still leading towards that darker road of, you know, what is, once you've sacrificed your belief system, you know, what is stopping you at that point from exacting your own free will at any point?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because the oath is about self-control a lot of times. It's about taking those carnal desires that you have and channeling it into a holy might, or a, you know, scream for justice or whatever.
There's so many Jedi and Sith, like, parallels
that are coming to your mind.
We could be making right now, but we'll just...
Oh, yeah.
We'll just not do that.
I mean, it's just that the paladin is so close to a lot of real life
yeah,
people.
But what you were getting at, that's always something really interesting to me, and I haven't been playing as long as, especially you, Jace, but, and I haven't dove into it as hard as you have, Tristan, but playing an evil character within a party. So normally you don't have an entire evil party. Usually, a lot of times you'll have some good, most of them will probably be neutral. I know I like playing neutral characters, so I can kind of skirt that line. How would you guys play, like, if you did take the Oathbreaker from the DMG, if you started going on that path, how would you guys play an evil character within, or Jace, if you're playing a Warlock and you were serving an evil patron and started, following down that line of evil, how would you guys play that character?
Again, I think it depends on the situation, but I'm going to give you a real answer here for just real answer's sake.
Okay.
So let's say a paladin has devoted his entire life to being able to, or being serving his deity, okay? Mm-hmm. And all he's asking for is that his little sister stays alive, and they die. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, no protection for her. There's no answer or anything like that. So he decides to carry on differently. I'm having trouble finding the Oathbreaker in the DMG. Do you know what page it's on? I guess it doesn't matter.
No, but we can consult good old D&D Beyond.
What? That's what it's handy for, D&D Beyond. Where you could do it, let's say your party doesn't help you with mm-hmm. it. Like, this is, you put them in charge of it, and then you're secretly harboring hate in your heart. And I do believe the Oathbreaker Paladin gets certain things that have to do with hate, right?
Yeah, and they get, different spells. Their channel divinity is definitely on the dark side rather than the light. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys were saying Edgelord for Warlock, but I'm pretty sure at 20th level you get the Dreadlord. Mm-hmm. Ability or
yep.
perk, class perk, so
yeah, I'm seeing it here now.
Yeah, so it's,
you're looking at the yeah. Oathbreaker now.
Yep, I am. Okay. And so I would play it as a character that goes along with the party through everything. They get to the final BBEG, and all of a sudden he's like, you guys can join me instead of blah blah blah, and then that's when the paladin turns. He just goes and he kills his people out of hate, and then when the BBEG has his back turned, then he kills him too, and then takes over as a main antagonist, and then your next campaign is overcoming that Oathbreaker Paladin. Like, you just set yourself up for your next campaign or one shot or whatever you have based on your role playing.
That's a good idea. So as a DM, they would take over that character as your antagonist, and then you would start re-rolling. That makes sense.
Yeah, basically. I remember I had this one character who was chaotic neutral. He was a hired assassin, and the dungeon master at the time, he was really new, and I only signed on for this because of money. I was getting paid for it. And then the guy that paid us was died. He was killed. And then the BBEG basically said, yeah, you guys can go along with us, and we'll give you money and, you know, everything that you're looking for. All you have to do is serve us. And we were kind of in this situation where it was like, there's no way I was getting out of this if I tried to fight. So my character did what my character would do. He turned on the party right then and there. You know, so things like that can happen. And then after that, I gave my character sheet up to the dungeon master and then re-rolled as something else.
Yeah.
And then I was a villain later on in the story.
Pretty cool.
It can be if you let it.
Right. And I think that the way that I would play that evil character is, I think, well, okay, so I think Lawful Evil is probably the easiest evil character to play in a group,
mm-hmm.
because you've still got your rhythm and your rudiments of every, you know, day for the last however many years, and I think that probably most Oathbreaker Paladins would just fall into that category. I don't think that an Oathbreaker would, I mean, unless there's an act of complete psychological destruction, then an Oathbreaker would immediately move to a like chaotic evil where it's just anything goes. I think a lot of them stay lawfully evil because even though you've broke your oath or you've changed your stance on this, you've still got a lifetime worth of ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that'd be hard to break. So if I were playing an Oathbreaker, I would probably be lawful evil. And lawful evil characters are kind of hard to pick up on their evil tendencies at times. You look at the Durgar race, where most of the gray dwarves are lawful evil, but as far as their society is concerned, that's just everyday life. And if you were to meet them, you might think, well, they're a little bit harsh, but you wouldn't necessarily say that they were just downright evil.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would not that I'm going to mask it from the party, but I would just make it, I would make it not obvious. You would play your selfish desires into what you thought the party needed to do or where they needed to go.
And then play like little merciless or whatever.
Yeah. And you got to remember too, that you're a very charismatic character.
Yeah.
Just by, you know, nature of how your class is built. So, you know, you would, you could play it off as however you wanted, you know, like where you're just, what sounds like just a playful suggestion is actually you heavily manipulating your party.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then depending on the situation, you know, do you ever atone once you've gone down that dark path? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, I would imagine there's a point where it's like you convince yourself it's, you've passed that point of no return, but there's always a chance. I mean, that would definitely be a cool conversation to have with your DM, because you could start going down the path of the Oathbreaker and then revert back after, you know, you run into a cleric of that deity or whatever. I mean, there's a bunch of different ways it could happen, but that's pretty cool to think about as well.
Yeah. There's definitely a bunch of routes that you could go down on there that,
yeah,
that you wouldn't necessarily have those same choices as a warlock, you know, given the same thing. You know, I don't think your ideals are as strong just based on how you gain your powers.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah, I mean, you're probably more blasé-faire, mm-hmm, as a warlock just because it was literally anything goes when you made the pact, so why would you change now that you have the pact?
Yeah, what's stopping you from making a pact with a new deity?
Right.
Or a new patron, rather.
And
nothing.
And can I just say one thing?
Say
I
want
a poll of how many warlocks choose Cthulhu.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up too, that this is the closest to playing Cthulhu you can do is by being a warlock.
I mean, seriously, everybody and their mom chooses Cthulhu as their patron. It seems. I wouldn't choose Cthulhu, but I am like in love with the Fae, so I'm going Archfey every time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there are some
cool
people
one
who love the giant squid man.
Yeah, dude. More power to them. You guys, I like watching squidbillies. You know, like that's some people just like stuff.
Good lord.
That's a show I haven't talked about or thought about in a long time.
It was on my YouTube recommended list the other day. You know the one where Rusty sells his soul to the devil and he can play guitar all of a sudden?
Yes.
Yeah, the song's been stuck in my head for a few days.
God, that show is so stupid.
It's pretty bad.
I'm glad I never fell down that dark hole.
You've never watched the Squidbillies?
I don't think maybe. So, no.
You owe it
Troy
to yourself
know what it's
to
like
go
to
listen
struggle
to the theme song.
All right. That's homework for tonight.
No, for
yeah,
real,
dude, that's homework for everybody for tonight.
Yeah, go listen to the theme song of Squidbillies if you have no idea what I'm talking about, because My dreams are all dead and buried.
Anyway, getting back on, and you know what? That could be the theme song for your paladin.
Yeah.
Getting back on the theme of everything that we're talking about, I think we went off on that huge tangent about paladins and roleplay just because I feel like paladins as a whole are very stagnant in how they are played, and that's because people are so afraid of giving up their powers. I guess we're trying to encourage you to play a paladin and be okay with those kinds of hard decisions, because they could really create a cool dynamic for you, a really cool story that gets put together because of how everything falls.
Well, here's something cool to think about is, how many of you guys watch Dice Camera Action?
Is that a rhetorical or is that for me?
No, I'm asking you.
Oh, I've watched parts of it.
Okay, Troy?
I don't think I have yet.
Okay. That is a prime example of a paladin, Evelyn. Starts off as this really chipper paladin who is, I mean, she's serving Lathander, and I think the Ravenloft is their first, is their like first stop. So it's like the perfect, you know, counter to the rest of Ravenloft. And as the adventure goes on and things happen, Evelyn's character now is a whole lot different than Evelyn when she was first being played.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't even know how many times we've said this about being flexible with your character, but it does lend itself to these epic games that go on that are streamed for us to consume all of this content. You see a common thread between these people who are playing, and the reason they get so attached to their characters is because they're not rigid. That Ooh, they yeah. allow this natural ebb and flow of the story influencing their characters, and you do get attached that way. Yeah. So, I mean, they just you don't have to watch all of Dice Camera Action, but go watch an early episode and then go watch a later episode, and the question that you'll come back with is, what the crap happened? Because there's such a mood shift. But it's natural over the case of 100 and however many episodes they're up to now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just happens over time.
It does.
And I want to ask you guys a question. When you guys talk about your different D&D campaigns, and you're recanting what your characters have done in the past, do you talk about how much damage your character did, or how good the story was, or do you talk about things that your character did or things that happened to your character?
Yeah, I see where you're going with this, and more times than not, it is things that my character has had happen, things that have influenced the people around my character, and things that my character has thought along the way. That's mm-hmm. typically what you think about and talk yep. about.
Yep.
And that'd be the same for me. I'd definitely, number one would always be what my character did or what my character, what happened to my character. Number two would be the story, but the only reason why I'd be talking about the story is because what my character did within the story.
Yep. You know that's what I mean? Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, and then damage is never spoken about.
Yeah, damage is never talked about. That's why I want to encourage everybody to break out, to allow your character to change with what you and the DM have set up, because they will create the moments that you're still talking about years from playing that one weird one-off that you did with your Goliath Barbarian.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to put it, too. We talked about it in one of our very first episodes of, really fleshing out your character and being able to create a character with role-playing in mind and not just how much damage I can do. That puts it even more, perfectly, Jace, about, that's not what you're going to remember. You can spend all the time in the world trying to, have the most powerful character and min-max him all the way up, but that's not what you're going to remember. You're going to remember what your character did within the story, and like you said, those moments, what happens, a lot more than you are going to be with the damage. I mean, you might remember cutting off a dude's head in one swing, but it's more of the story than anything else.
Well, this is, like, unrelated, what I'm about to say, to Paladins and Warlocks, but it is completely on topic of what we just started talking about. When I make a character of any kind, my class features, the feats that I take, are never influenced by what they actually do, but are always influenced by my character's history. And the most obvious place that that plays out is when I make a wizard, and depending on what race the wizard is, where the wizard comes from in the world, what experiences the wizard has had, actually do influence the spell choices that I take. Because there are a lot of times when I may only have one or two spells that actually do damage, and yep, the rest of them are all utility spells.
Yep. So I guess to sum up all of this, the Paladin and the Warlock are very similar, but they're both characters that can be put into stagnant tropes if you let them. Try not to let that happen and see what can happen for you.
Yeah. Yeah, do that. Do the thing. Play the D&D the way that you want to play it.
Buy the adventure candles.
Buy the adventure candles.
Do that.
And on next week's episode, we eat a gun.
Hater.
I probably actually can't say that.
Yeah.
Legally. Probably gonna get sued.
Do it, you won't.
You right. Alright. Anyway, thank you all for tuning in and listening to us. Remember that we post new episodes weekly, 12 noontime Central Standard. So wherever you're at in the world, do your mathematics, because I'm not good with math. Anyway,
every Saturday.
Did I say that already? I don't think I did. I think I just probably said the week.
Yeah, every Saturday.
Every Saturday.
All the Saturdays.
At the noontime. And yeah, we look forward to hearing from you nerds. Don't be afraid to give us a rating, even if it's a 1-star. Please let us know if there is things that you hate in the podcast, and we will try our best to make those better. So, anyway. You guys, I hate you both.
Ditto.
Goodbye, everybody.
And I hate the way you said goodbye.